We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
It's the Gridiron Podcast. The head coach, Jay Norvell, the Hall of Famer, Mike Edwards. I'm John Ramey, physically distant, but perhaps never closer. We visit with you again. We record this on Thursday. We broadcast it on Tuesday. And it's good to visit with everyone. I have to say, personally, in this time where so many routines have been disrupted and so many of our kind of natural rhythms have had to change, I'm now settling into the Thursday groove with you guys. So nice to see everybody again.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's another Thursday again. I look forward to this on the schedule here.
Mike Edwards, where are you? I'm very impressed that Mike Edwards has now developed the opportunity to go remote beyond his usual remote location. I don't want to get you, you know, you don't have to give away too much, but you're not in your normal location, Mike.
And not in Kansas anymore, Toto. I am in a little town called Doyle. We are headed out with the family, going out camping. So that's where we're on the side of the road, and we're linking my phone up to my iPad and ready to make conversation.
Well, all right. We're impressed.
Me too. I was going to say, like, I'm impressing myself. My wife set me up. That's the truth. That's the truth.
Shout out to Crystal.
Yeah. Do the hotspot. We'll pull over. We're good to go.
Coach, last time we did this last week, we focused a lot on the police killing of George Floyd and the response throughout the world, including all 50 states here in the U.S. And one of the most positive things to come from this has been the what I consider the fortunate, unrelenting nature of the conversation that continues to happen across society. And if I can just speak from my own experience, within social gatherings of white people who are having very frank conversations just in my own world about the state of things and the lack of change and the outrage and what needs to be different. And part of this ongoing and beautifully relentless focus that has remained on the need for reform and transformation in law enforcement, specifically because of institutionalized racism, has been teams, athletes, coaches, organizations, universities, institutions speaking out. And your program, Nevada Football, put out a very powerful video earlier on social media and published it to the world with what I think is an essential aspect of this, which is not, and I've been guilty of this, to not kind of softly say this or things must or this situation is, but to specifically say Black Lives Matter, police killing of Black people must stop. And I was just so proud to have a small bit part in this program. And I just thought it was incredible.
Well, I was very proud. You know, the last few weeks, you know, you know, this just hasn't happened overnight. There's been a lot of conversations in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, last week we had a lot of angry kids and a lot of hurt kids. And we had a lot of conversations that came from that. And we had about a 2-hour meeting last Thursday and as a team. And we haven't, you know, we haven't talked at any football last week. It was just all some of these things that were happening. But I was really, really proud of what came out of those conversations, because we had a lot of kids that were, that really didn't understand each other. And they had a chance to really just talk about some of the things that they didn't know about each other. And whether it was Black kids talking about their own personal experiences with racism, or kids from smaller towns that just didn't understand, they all got a chance to kind of just talk openly about it. And I think what came out of it was kind of a shared understanding and kind of a unified thought process that we wanted to do something. And at first they wanted to do a statement. And then really, I didn't even know about the video. You know, it was pretty much done when they reached out to me and asked me to participate. But when I saw it, I was just really proud. I've been talking to coaches all over the country about this issue and their teams. And I did a national interview with the Washington Post last night. And, you know, one of the things that they asked was, you know, how do you deal with these issues with recruits and your team? And, you know, we've always had to deal with these issues. I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, and Mike can probably talk about, you know, his years in college, but, you know, one of the things that can tear your team up quicker than anything is having, you know, racial disagreements or tension on your team. And you're very conscious of that as a coach. I mean, anytime there's any kind of problem like that, you have to address it and you have to work through it, talk it out, and guys got to leave with some kind of understanding, because that'll tear your team up faster than anything. And you can't have a locker room where guys, you know, can't come to terms with one another. And you don't have to love every guy in your team, but you do have to have some common respect. And so this is nothing new. And we've always been very straightforward about it in every team that I've been a part of. And so this was just another example that, you know, this is different because of everything that's going on a national basis. It's just got a lot more publicity right now. But I was really proud. I thought the kids gave it a lot of thought. I thought they did it respectfully to one another. And they came out and did something as a team. And I was really proud what they came up with. And, you know, and the conversation's got to continue. You know, I just think we have to continue to find ways to make things better. And, you know, in our businesses and our teams and our schools and in our community. And, you know, I think the conversation is good. It's positive, and I think hopefully we can see some good come out of it.
After last week, Ramey and I actually called each other, and I sat down for probably a good half an hour, 45 minutes, and texting and leaving some messages from my old teammates, James Canada, who I played with, and we always, you know, we were salt and pepper, you know, he and I are roommates, and he's a D lineman, O line. I was 79, he's 97. He's my brother, you know, and we just had conversations, you know, going to bed at night. You know, we lived in the old University Inn, and we literally like could basically touch shoulders because it was so small and us two big, big hosses. But for our team back in the day, I mean, we had four championships in 5 years that I played. And I think the one of the reasons why we were so successful was because of the cut and the open dialogue that we had back then. And if you, just like you guys have been successful in the past 3 years, if you have a team that work together on all aspects of life, then you're definitely going to be productive in all aspects of your life. And it showed on the football field. I mean, we were number one in passing, and we had D linemen that were, people were afraid of our guys. And we came together. Obviously, James Cannon and I, we fought. I mean, on practice field, we battled. But afterwards, it was a hug, and we go grab a awful awful on the way home. You know, it's like that kind of stuff it runs deep. And this day and age is, these kids have to, I say kids, they're 18, 19, 20-year-old young men who are becoming in their own, and it's great to have and see and hear the dialogue and the passion they have for not only, you know, Nevada football, but for real life and wanting to step out of just the football realm. And everyone's in my growing up is like, hey, you're a dumb jock. You're a dumb jock. And it's like, no, because these young guys that are putting their soul and their life and their love of themselves and their, I call it flavor, you know, we're all different flavors. They put their flavor out there and they put themselves. I guarantee you there's a young man in high school that look up to guys like, you know, Lawson Hall and Don Peterson. They look up and if they see a video like that, that empowers them to just have conversations with their friends. And it really, really bleeds all the way through like a web all the way around. And if we, like you said last week, if we just get that conversation going, then and if you teach one student or one player or one teammate and it reaches out to other ones, it spreads good, not evil, like everything else in the media world. So it's good to see these nice little clips of young men putting their souls out there and open it up themselves and allow other people to come in and spreading that positivity and spreading that stuff that we really need these days and having those young guys step up. I'm very proud to be an alumni right now. It's more than ever. So thank you, Coach.
No, that's great. Thank you, Mike. You know, and Mike, you can speak on this because I did a Zoom meeting with one of my high school teammates who's a Hall of Fame high school coach back in Wisconsin, and he wanted me to come on and talk to his team, and just talking to high school kids, it just was really interesting because, you know, I think one of the problems that we've seen when kids come to college is that high school kids these days are just so, they're so concerned with just fitting in. They just want to be accepted by their classmates. They don't want to rock the boat. And it just looking at all these young faces on the Zoom screen and talking about this issue, you know, the high school kids are very hesitant to speak up. And it just reminded me of that, you know, being a high school kid and not wanting to rock the boat, not want to be different. I think it's just really, really important that kids learn to have their own voice, you know, and whatever it is, and not be afraid to speak up and to show the courage to have an opinion about something that's important. And it's taken us some time in our program to get these kids to just voice their own opinion and have the courage to speak to one another and to speak their own background. And so that was really, you know, it's been very, very, very good to see the maturity of our football team and the way that our guys are starting to grow up and take, you know, have an opinion. And it's important. To me, that's what college is all about. You know, people kind of growing into their ideas and becoming mature. But I got a little glimpse of looking back at some of the high school faces and seeing how hesitant they were to even speak up. And I get it. You know, I really do get it. And, you know, we spend so much time trying to develop leadership. And, you know, leadership's not easy. It's not easy. You have to take a stand and you do have to step out of your comfort zone. And that's not an easy thing for kids to do nowadays. It really isn't. And so it's definitely a process that we're continuing to work on with our guys.
One thing I am reminded of is the great book that you recommended the team read last summer, The Captain's Class, which is a tremendous book if you love sport and kind of competition and the philosophy of it. And it breaks down across all different sports, the elite teams of all time, and distills what the competitive advantages were, which it is interesting, Coach, that you recommended a book that says explicitly great coaching isn't the difference maker, which was a very egoless gesture on your part. I started to think back to that as you talked about your team meeting and then kind of all of the, I mean, if you want to oversimplify it, we, in a societal sense, must have a sense of shared mission like a team if we are to move forward in this very specific and terrible area of police brutality. But I also started to think, and I have never, perhaps this is a shortcoming, but I have never thought about, are there black captains represented on this team when the guys go out and walk to midfield to toss the coin? Like, who's, I kind of look at position groups, right? Like there's a special teams guy, an offensive guy, and a defensive guy. Will there be a new kind of calibration of that? Or is that something that's so ingrained just because of the beautiful organic distillation of leadership that happens in football that your or any coach's methodology about selecting captains and leaders will be unchanged?
Well, I think for us, and this has been a process for us, we really made a conscious effort to try to cultivate and teach leadership after our first year here. And so it really starts in January, and really from January until we announce captains in August, it's we talk about it every week. We have weekly meetings on it. We give these guys opportunities to lead, and they have to prove themselves through the off season, through the 8 weeks of grit in the winter, through spring practice, through summer training, through training camp. And so it's a real process. And I think by the time we get to August, we have a really good idea who our top leaders are. And I think the players have, and we talk about the qualities that we're looking for. I think that's been something that's been really good, is that we've identified what leadership is. And you know, some leaders are quiet. Some guys are servant leaderships. You know, in that book, they talked about the water carriers. They're the guys that just seem to always make everything else work, and they don't even really have to speak much. Some guys are more vocal. You know, some guys just the toughest guy on the team, and everybody looks up to him because of that. I mean, there's all kind of different styles of leadership, and over the course of the summer or in the spring and the summer, you know, I think the kids really have a long time to think about what that means and what they want to represent them as a team. And you know, and sometimes leadership isn't always what you think it is. And, you know, I think the biggest thing from that book that I took out as a coach was, you know, sometimes the leader isn't a choir boy. Sometimes the leader doesn't always do everything right. And I, you know, I think sometimes we have an unrealistic expectation that, you know, this guy's got to be, he's got to be the Boy Scout that does everything right in every area of his life. And it's just not necessarily the truth. Some of the best leaders have had some shortcomings and they've made some mistakes but they were able to help elevate their teammates to a higher level. And I think that was the beautiful thing about that book. And, you know, and I think the other thing is that most of the best leaders are not the best players, the most talented players. I think that's the other great thing that came out of that book for me is that, you know, your leader doesn't have to be your most talented player. And many times it's not. It's the guy that cares the most. It's the guy that has influence over his teammates, who his teammates respect. And I just think it helps to identify that and talk openly about it, to teach the young guys what leadership is and also to make sure you can identify over time who those individuals are, who they best are. And every year is different, you know. And I'll say this with Mike on here because, I mean, championship teams have leadership in the trenches. And you got to have those guys in the trenches that can really get the attention of the rest of the locker room to really be an upper echelon team. And I know it was like that when Mike was here.
For sure. That is the truth. I was a captain my junior and senior year. For the pack. And like I said, with James Canada by my side, Mike Crawford, John Dutton, I was honored to be a 2-year captain. I think one of the very, very few linemen to do so. Awesome. To that point anyway. And I was voted on. I don't know how you guys do it now, and I'm not even going to ask you how, but we did the players vote. And yep. To me, that was better than any championship we ever won, to actually be able to lead by example, or however they saw me as a captain, as a leader for 2 years. That's like my biggest honor and privilege to do so.
For us, our yearly process is in January. We elect a leadership council. So that's one guy from each of the 10 position groups. And that's picked by the position. And so those guys, we meet with those guys twice a week in the off season, and we talk about leadership. And then the really cool thing is we read a book called the Commitment Continuum, the Athlete's Guide to Commitment. And what it did was it broke down different levels of commitment as a player. And it defined them. And what our leadership council started doing is meeting and voting on each player of the team on what level of commitment. And we post it. They post it every week in the season. And so if a guy's on the lower end, you know, he'll come to that committee and the guys will tell him, you know, you got to pick it up. You're not doing what you're supposed to do. You're not getting all your reps in. You were late. You wore the wrong gear to workouts. And it really has added a different layer of accountability on our team, because the leadership council are the guys that enforce it. And so that's been an amazing transformation. You know, Coach Simmons kind of leads that up, and he meets with those guys twice a week. And so all of those things get reinforced on a daily basis in the off season. And, you know, and that's one of the things I hate right now, Mike, is because the kids aren't all here. You know, usually in the summertime, you got everybody here, everybody's running, everybody's lifting. And so we're gradually starting to get them back. But that peer pressure about working in the weight room, we're not getting that right now. And, you know, guys are getting on the computer and getting on each other, but it's just not the same as being here, you know, grinding together. And so we're slowly getting that back this month. This is a transition month for us to get back in the weight room. Our first group will be in the weight room next week for the first time all summer for, 3 months. And so we're really getting another 20 guys are coming in this weekend and then another 10 on the 22nd. So by July 1st, we should have the whole team here.
How is that pilot program of scaling up? The initial group was 30 players with 19 football, 6 men's basketball, and 5 women's basketball, I believe.
Yeah.
And so far, so good?
Yeah. So we had about 20 players in the first test group. They came here on June 1st, and they had a 14-day quarantine. And so they're just finishing that up the end of this week. And so Monday they'll start working out in our facility. And so we tested all of our football players that are back, and they all tested negative for the COVID. So that's been a good thing. A lot of places haven't. You know, I know Alabama had 5 last week, and then I just heard they have 20 players that have tested positive. And I think they went to a party and all hung out or something. And so I know Arkansas State had 7. I think Boise has 8 players that have tested positive. And so, you know, it's tricky. It's just a really complex deal. But so far, so good. And, you know, our kids have to fill out a form in the morning. They take their temperature before they work out. And that will all start on Monday morning with Coach Simmons. And we'll get another 20 guys come in, and they're going to have to go through their 2-week quarantine and then another 10. So it's a transition month right now, just getting everybody back.
I mean, I hate to have to even think about these kinds of things, obviously, but the idea of enforcing a quarantine on college kids, I mean,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, are you guys doing bed checks?
No, it's pretty much on the honor system, but you're right. It's just, you know, college kids, they're college kids. I mean, they're young and, you know, they interact with a lot of people on campus and, you know, they just have to be careful. You know, I think the big thing is just common sense. You know, wear a mask if you're around a group of people, wash your hands, and, you know, and just try to lay low and not, you know, be in a lot of crowded spaces. I think those are the big things that we've been trying to communicate with our guys. And then, you know, as we get new players in, they just got to be careful hanging out with the guys that have been here, you know, and that's hard for teammates to do, but we just got to kind of be smart about that. And it's by far not a perfect science, and there's a lot of holes in what could happen. And, you know, we're just trying to get our guys to have good common sense. That's about all we could do right now.
This has been the Gridiron Podcast. Thank you for listening. The head coach, Jay Norvell. For the Hall of Famer, Mike Edwards, I'm John Ramey. Until next time, so long, everyone.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.